today, Avery, by having you tell us a little bit about where and when you were born and about what your mother and father did for a living and any brothers and sisters that you might have.
I was born in 1947, Graham, North Carolina. Mother, she was a housewife all her life. Father, he was a carpenter by trade. Had one sister and two brothers, all older than me. Attended schools here in Orange County, graduated from Orange High School. Spent 4 years in the military, United States Navy. Came out of the military, went to work with Winn-Dixon. Spent approximately 10 years with them, cutting meat. And left there and went to White Furniture Company in April of 1975. Started out in rub and pack and spent approximately 20 years in finished all rub and pack area. And started out with a drawer sander. On the left, I was supervisor of the rub and pack department. And probably 9 years of those was spent in finishing area. Then transferred into, well, at that time it was all in one unit. No distinction between all three departments there. And I was in finished approximately 9 years. And got into the rub and pack department. Became assistant supervisor. And I stayed in that capacity for a few years until a supervisor I worked under retired. And approximately 2 years after his retirement, they closed the Hillsborough plant down. Mm-hmm. At that time, Whites had two plants, one in Mabin and one in Hillsborough. And after closing the Hillsborough plant, they transferred quite a few to Mabin out of the Hillsborough plant, and I was one of them. And I went up to Mabin plant and went to work in the rub and pack area as assistant supervisor to the supervisor that was there.
What was his name?
Carlton Atkins. Mm-hmm. Carlton Atkins. Probably a year and a half being in Mabin, Carlton left the company to pursue other interests. And they made me the supervisor of that department, where I remained in that capacity until the closing of the Mabin plant in July of 1993, with our final day at White Furniture. How about coaching my career as far as job-wise?
Do you remember how you got your job with White? And how old were you at the time when you took the job?
I'd say around 24, 25. Mm-hmm. And I don't know, cutting meat at Winn-Dixon was a good job. It was so much odd hours and anything involved, and I just got tired of weekend work and night work. And I decided to change my career. And unfortunately today, if I could have foresight enough to know, I'd have stayed in the meat cutting business. Mm-hmm. And that's something we don't know about. Would all tell the future. I don't reckon it'd be no surprise to anybody.
Mm-hmm. Why do you think you'd stayed in meat cutting if you knew what you know today?
Well, knowing it, after spending 20 years with the place, they just abruptly shut the door one day on me. And of course, I seen it coming, you know, long before it even happened. It, you could tell that the quality of the work had gone down and our sales had gone down. Overall, just the furniture industry altogether at that time was just in poor shape. I mean, there's only so many pieces of pie, and, you know, so many companies in North Carolina make furniture. We just had the market flooded with it. And us being a high-end maker of furniture, by high-end, I mean expensive stuff. Mm-hmm. When the economy got in the shape it was in, it, you know, it affected the people that normally buy our product line, and when the economy got so poor like it was, I mean, couldn't nobody afford it, you know, really buy it. And everybody was watching what they spent the money for. They made a decision that there wasn't enough work for our plant in Hickory to justify keeping both of them open, so they made the decision to close the Mayville plant and put approximately 200 people out of work. And of course, some had the option to go to Hickory, but that was quite a long transfer if anybody was willing to go. I don't think anybody went, not over one or two, that, you know, that right at retirement age or something. It was a shock to a lot of people at that time, I'm sure. And I've seen it, been through it in good times, bad times, and we always, you know, worked it out. But things would get better sooner or later. We'd have some short time. We never just had a complete shutdown.
When did you start noticing the quality of the furniture going down and sales dropping?
When the economy got bad, you just can't keep building furniture. There's no place to put it. I mean, it's, you can only warehouse so much. And, when sales go down, it just, it's either short time or layoffs, which a lot of that affected us. And I think Hickory done what they could to keep enough air for people to at least have some type of income coming in. But it had been it's been there a long time, white furniture. But in 1881, it was when the white family had it. They, to my knowledge, they never had any shutdown periods, you know, for a long period of time, anything. Mm-hmm. They had a little short time at once. Once in a while, but it was pretty good, pretty well run when the White family had it. And, they thought a lot of the help. And, this day and time, it's the bottom line of that dollar. And, of course, in any business, it's like that. You got to make a profit to stay in business.
Did you notice any differences between the way the White family ran it and Hickory?
Oh yeah.
Ran it?
Oh yeah.
What sort of things did you notice?
Well, from day one, when Hickory bought them out, the production went up. They increased the production and the same amount of people. And that right there will tell you one thing, they were putting out a quick product, but it was less quality in it than when the White family had it. When White family had it, it was when it went in the box, it was ready to go. Mm-hmm. I mean, there was no question about it. If it was in the warehouse, you could pull it out of the warehouse a year later, and it was just like the day it went in the box. So it was in good shape. Had very, very few complaints when the White family had it. But, when Hickory got it, they I think from day one they had in mind just more or less to buy in competition. That's all it was for. That's what they done. They bought the name. I think all their intention was to buy it and run it for, make a little money off of it. So, from what I've observed from them and what I've heard, that's what they done. I know it put a lot of good people out of work. A lot of good craftsmen. People that, you know, really believe in putting out a nice product and everything. It took a lot of pride in the work and all. Mm-hmm. And it's hard on people that have been, you know, 20, 30, 40 years and just abruptly one day say, well, you don't have no job. And it's hard for people like that to go out and learn a new trade and everything after doing that so long time. Some of them is less educated than others, and the way the world's gotten now is high tech. It's really hard for a man just walk out the next morning and start looking for a job. It's just not that many unskilled jobs or whatever, low skill in the world today to pay anything. I mean, there's plenty of unskilled and low skilled jobs there, but they. Pay is not like it was when the man had his job to start with.
What were wages like under the White family?
Good.
Are they good?
I don't recall. It may have been it once or twice or so, but I recall every year that I was working when the White family had it, they always give them a general raise. Mm-hmm. And very seldom, I don't recall every year that went by where we didn't get a general rate. And they did what they could. I mean, it was nothing, extraordinary, but they had a bonus system. They give bonuses at Christmas. And that was one thing that was cut out the first time, as soon as Hickory had it, and no more bonuses. And there were some years that went by that there was no general raise either. And a lot of people look forward to that, the Christmas and all the bonuses. And all the general raises in particular. But that's something you didn't see when Hickory had it, though. They may have given one or two. It was just the cost of living. It's nothing. Nothing extra to it.
Hmm. Do you mind telling me what you started at when you went to work?
$2.65, I believe. I went to work in Hillsboro, Miss. Ted Smith, superintendent of the Hillsboro plant. And I went in that day and asked him for a job. And back then, it was just about to the point if you didn't see somebody's name in the obituary, you didn't get a job at White's, because very seldom anybody ever quit. And they usually kept a full schedule of people. And he told me to come back, and I told him at that day, I said, well, I'll go to work somewhere today. I said, I got to have a job. And he said, well, I'm going to give you a job. He said, I usually start people at $2.50. I said, I'm going to give you a benefit of the doubt. I'm going to start you at $2.65. Which was nice of him. I mean, it was quite a pay cut from what I've been making, but I know over a period of time I'd get back to where I was at.
Mm-hmm. What were you making as a meat cutter at Winn-Dixie?
I believe in 1970 I was making $4.50 an hour. Hmm. Which back then was pretty good pay at that time. And, I would say well over a 20-year period, I guess my salary let's see, what would it be? 5-6 times what I'd started at. Mm-hmm. Of course, that didn't come easy. Like I say, it was a long period of time getting there.
As a supervisor, what sort of, how did the takeover, Hickory buying out Whites, how did that affect what you had to do on the job day to day in terms of increasing the production and that sort of thing?
Well, when Hickory bought it, they upped the production. And naturally, when you up production, you've got to put out more product in the same amount of time or less time. And they want the same quality of product. And you trying to do all three at one time, it gets pretty hectic at the time. Mm-hmm. Sometimes you can put out quantity, but you can't put out quality. It's a lot of times you can't do that. But I think their very bottom line was they wanted quantity. And give a little bit of the quality. And I think that's where it just finally running into the ground. It got to the point where the product, you know, wasn't like it was when they first come in there. And they started building cheaper furniture. Mm-hmm. When you start cutting corners, sooner or later people see it. And if they've been accustomed to buying nice furniture and high-end furniture, they start looking for them things and they're building another brand of furniture. Our sales went down. I don't know what the sales figures were there at the last, but my understanding, we were still making money, but Hickory was losing money, but they just didn't have enough product line to keep both plants from operating. They took our product line, carried it to Hickory. And I soon get the people in Hickory on a full schedule up there. Or somebody had to lose, so I ran it with us.
How did some of the older folks who were there react to the closing, the news that the place was going to close?
Well, it was pretty sad, really. You see a man 2 or 3 years from his retirement. And like I say, he's not highly educated. He's at the very minimum educated. And to see him, he'd have to leave him. 3 or 4 years maybe from retirement. And it's hard for a man like that to go right out and pick up, you know, keep going until he does reach retirement. Of course, I mean, you know, a lot of the younger people, I mean, you know, you can always learn different skills. The older people, it's hard to go out there and find a job. People are not going to hire them. They know they're not going to be there for a short period, and they're not going to take the risk of someone on the job that age getting hurt or health get bad or something. And, I mean, it's a lot involved to it.
Do you remember where you were and when you found out that the place was going to, when they announced that they were closing the plant?
Well, they called us all the supervisors into the conference room one morning, and the president of the company, Mr. Randy Austin, he'd come down that morning. He called us all in the conference room, supervisors, and made the announcement. Was it, like I say, it was devastation right then for everybody to hear that. And he said he'd gather everybody in the warehouse and make a general announcement of it to all the employees. And that's all he did that morning. He made his announcement and he was gone right quick. He didn't linger around for questions. Now, where he had any feelings about the place, shutting it down, I have no idea. I can't speak for him. But I'm sure it hurt him in a lot of ways, but it sure didn't look good on his record, having shut down plants. But to me, he was always, you know, after the dollar, that's all it was. They didn't take a lot of interest in the employees, I don't think.
Do you remember how you reacted when you heard, what you thought?
Well, like I said, I'd say probably a year, 2 years maybe prior to that, after them closing the Hillsboro plant. You get a feeling, you know, sooner or later, well, if you close one, sooner or later you're going to close the other one. You could sense it coming. And at that time, it was a short time, and we were trying to make do what we had, I reckon. But you could feel it.
Mm-hmm.
And you was hoping that, you know, it wasn't going to be like that. But finally, the day came, and then they decided to close. A month or so before then, there had been a meeting, and my superintendent had made a comment one morning in one of our meetings that had anybody heard a rumor of the plant being going to close down. Nobody had heard it, maybe one or two, and he said, well, it was just a rumor. There's no truth to it. And it wasn't 30 days later, sure enough, it closed it. And I think it caught him off guard, just like it did anybody else. Because he had just signed the papers on a brand new house the day before they announced it. And he had asked the president of the company, our president's wife, was there anything going on he needed to know about? And he told him no, everything was fine. So he went and closed out the house. And to my knowledge, he's still living in it. He's a well-educated man. He left with Wyman Industries as plant manager. And it really wasn't any problem for him finding a job. He liked to say he was well educated. But it hurt the little man, it really did. The everyday employee. Sure did. And his son out there today just still hadn't found a job. And it's been over close to 2 years now. Going on a year and a half. They son that hadn't found another employment. Like I say, probably with age and their education.
Mm-hmm.
It's not that many furniture places in the area. Kraft Tea, they was close to us, but they can only employ so many people. I understand a lot of what worked there. Yeah, it was really rough hearing it, I'm telling you, it really was.
You remember how you broke the news to your family?
Well, I just came home and told my wife, I said, well, they're shutting the place down. She said, well, what are you going to do? I said, I don't know. I said, I'll worry about that bridge when I get there. And in the ensuing few days after the announcement, the unemployment people came to us, the employment agencies, and said they'd offer job training and schooling, and anyone wanted to go to trade school, they'd pay for that. And they offered a self-employment scheme or a program. And I told my wife, I said, well, this would be a good time as any for me to find out if I can make it on my own. So I took them up on it and attended school for a year. And the self-employment program was more or less just a crash course in business administration. And the way it was explained to us, it was just a 4-year program fit it into a year where people go out and become self-employed, start their own business. So I took them up on it, and I've tried it, and I'm doing it today. And been very fortunate so far. Hope things continue as good as they have been. But if necessary, I guess at some point I had to, I'd go back to the public room. In some capacity, I don't know what it'd be. Not likely furniture. Even though I know the trade, but it's just not that much a job, security in furniture.
The Hickory Company paid to have the workers, offered them the opportunity to go to get this training?
Yeah, Hickory paid for 2 quarters of training, and the state would pick up the rest. The state paid for it, but Hickory said if they didn't, meet it all, that they would pay for it. And they gave severance pay, mm-hmm. and depending on how long you'd been there, years of service. And one thing that really hurt when you laying people off like that was the insurance.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you could carry your insurance for 3 months after you leaving the place. Then COVID took over. Of course, when I left, mine was around $100 a month just on me and my wife.
Mm-hmm.
No, not just on me, because I couldn't carry it on my wife after we left the plant. And within a 3 month time period, I was told it would go to $320, I think, somewhere around there, on the fourth month. And I was notified prior to the third month ending, it would be $450-some. And that's how quick it jumped. It was
just for you or for you
individually? Just me individually. And there was no way I could carry the insurance. I mean, I had, being a veteran, I mean, if I needed insurance, I could always go to Veteran Administration.
So are you insured now under some sort of a VA plan?
Yeah, fortunately.
Where'd you take the training at?
Alamance Tech College. Institute of Alamance Community College, ACC, whatever. It was a lot of classroom work, and it was on-the-job training, or more or less on-the-job monitoring, whatever. They're a right good program. People that taught it, they seemed to know what they were doing. They taught a lot of the people that was enrolled there. I think it was approximately 7 of us out of the white plant attended the self-employment school class. And I know for a fact there's 4 that is in business for sales now. I checked on the other 3 lately that I haven't been in contact with. Yeah, but everybody tried it, which is a pretty good success rate if you get 4 out of the 7. So. At least if the other 3 is not in business, they got the knowledge to know how to be in business.
Had you always worked on furniture, even when on the side?
Yeah, more or less.
For pay?
Yeah.
When you were a white?
More or less for a hobby. And then now I put it into full-time work now. It's enjoyable if you take something over and make it look good again. And store something, an antique. And see the people that you do things for, that they're pleased with your work. And I mean, it makes you feel good. There's not a lot of money in it. Of course, I didn't go into it. Make a killing just to make a living. I've been pleased so far with what I've accomplished. Of course, they were saying, you know, some days are diamonds, some days are coal. And, well, that's the way it is in any business. It's good being your own boss, though.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes you have to chew your own butt after you get things done. It's enjoyable.
How does it compare to working for Hickory?
Well, it's night and day difference as far as working for somebody else and working for yourself. When you work for yourself, you got a lot of responsibility. And you can set your own hours, that's one thing.
Mm-hmm.
If you decide you want to, you know, take an hour off, you ain't got to be asking to get off or whatever. But when you're at public work, the man expects you from 7 to 4 or 8 to 5 or whatever. And you hit back and call at all time. Just whatever he wants, that's what you got to give. But being self-employed, you get out of it with what you put in it. You put a lot of work into it. It's rewarding. Has been so far. And everybody's been pleased with what I've done. That's a reward in itself, knowing something that you've done pleases somebody else. And when you're in public work, it's hard to please man all the time. And even if it's right, a lot of times he's going to find something wrong with you. For some reason,
when Hickory started speeding up, pushing the production, did that put a lot more stress on you? Did you have to push workers more?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I was just ordinary worker. There was not a lot of stress in the job. Once you get into management position, there's a tremendous amount of responsibility. And the man expecting you to get it done, and regardless, he wants it done, and you got to get it done. And there was a lot of overtime put in, which was unpaid for. Anytime you get on a salary position, you're his and 7 days a week, 24 hours around the clock. And that's about the way it got to be.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't just for a short time that I was fixing to give it up before they give me up. Not to become too stressful. I mean, I cope with it. But I guess that in part was to blame some. But I was just growing tired of it. I didn't like the job I was doing at that time. And just didn't have any freedom, more or less, you could say.
What do you mean you didn't have any freedom?
Well, to make plans, I mean, you could say, well, I'm going to the beach such and such day or something, and if anything come up, I mean, you know, the plant come first. You'd have to change plans, or you just couldn't make any plans.
Hmm.
Being in that capacity and everything.
So what did you want to do? You wanted to resign as a road pack supervisor?
I thought about it several times and just giving it up and just going back to being a regular worker. I know it's been a lot less stressful and everything. You get in that position, you get irritable and cut people short all the time, especially your family members. You don't do it intentionally, but a lot of times it happens that way. people think you make a whole lot of money by being in a bank, and that's not necessarily true. I, for one, didn't make a lot of money in it. It has its privileges, but it has its disadvantages too. There's more disadvantages than advantages too.
What are the disadvantages besides not having any freedom?
Well, you're more or less there for any time they want you, but you're there.
Mm-hmm.
You have to be there. And, trying to work people, you have people, some people that's good people to work for, you gotta work with. Of course, you're gonna always have one in the bunch that gives you trouble from day one. And at that time, I had two or three in my department that wanted things done their way, and you try to explain to them that's not the way we're going to do it. But it made your job a lot harder.
Mm-hmm.
But other people in there, I would say maybe 5% was like it. But the other 95, you have no trouble with them. I mean, they enjoyed, you know, the job you was doing. At least they said so, anyway. I hope they meant what they said, that they enjoyed working for me and everything. I enjoyed working with them. And I never minded helping any time that needed help. I always was there to give them help. That's one thing I believe in, just being a supervisor. I know I didn't have to work, but if it need be, I got in there and worked with them. A lot don't think that way, though.
A lot of the other supervisors?
Yeah, there's a lot of them. A lot of them was like that. Didn't believe in putting hands on anything.
What did the workers think about that?
Well, they didn't particularly like them. I mean, just be quite honest with you, a lot of them, they didn't have no respectful, no regard for anything.
Were these men who worked their way up, or brought in from the outside?
Well, both. Some from outside, some from within. But you take been working with people so many years, and then working beside him, you know, every day, and then all of a sudden you're working for him. It's hard to work for a man that you expect the same out of him as you would yourself. Some of them didn't, though. Overall, it was a good bunch of people, though. I mean, I'm sure it was just like it is any place. And like I say, you got that 5%, whatever percentage it is. It makes it hard on the whole bunch overall.
What sort of things would they, sort of problems would you have with people who...
Well, attendance problems is one of the major things, is trying to get people to realize that, you know, they're hired to do a job, they expect them when they're scheduled to work. You always got their percentage that got to be somewhere else. And then they wonder why when the picks come up short, and why this, why that, and they're not making any money, and they just don't realize they had the opportunity to make it, but you can't make it not being there.
So how would you handle folks like that?
Well, they'd handle itself. They had a point system there at White Pan. And after accumulating 8 points, you automatically fire yourself. So once you get a point, you can work it off by working 20 straight days. You drop that point. And of course, some of them did. Several stayed right on the borderline all the time, at 7.5, and just from one step away from being fired any day.
So they played the numbers?
They would play the numbers. Don't want to take a day off and get by with it, and work just long enough to get one off before you get another back on.
What sort of things do you think, in your opinion, it took to make a good supervisor there?
A lot of patience. Patience was number one thing. A lot of temperament. Patience, especially because you had to be patient with people. The old saying goes, you can drive a mule with water, but you can't make them drink. It's the same way with people. You can't make them work. They've got to have it in their own self to want to do something. You can ask, but that's about all you can do. And it's really hard to fire a person, really, today. I mean, you've got to have a pretty good cause where you can terminate somebody at the job now. It had to be something extraordinary. I had several that fired themselves, but I never did have to fire anybody. Well, I did fire one, but personnel man, he let her come back, so.
What did, was it she? What did she do?
She. Nothing toward women. I mean, I enjoyed working with women and everything. As long as they were men, I treated them all the same. There was no partiality showed either way. Well, like I say, you got one that always keeps something stirred up. That was one of them.
What do you mean by keeping something?
Well, just keeping everything, distractions going on everywhere. You can't have that in a public workplace.
You mean like screwing around on the job?
Oh, yeah, loafing and keeping people bickering, fussing, carrying on. Yeah, you can't have that.
What was it like to, under Hickory, to have them sort of, these expectations that you get out so much product and then... sort of be stuck between them and these people who you've worked with for a lot of years.
Well, there was a lot of shock to a lot of people there when Hickory took over and stepped the production up. And people hadn't been accustomed to that. And, a lot of them balked at first, but over a little period of time, they found out they were going to have to do it to keep the job. And, they eventually came around and put it in another gear, I reckon it's a... Some have been working one pace all their life, and that's all they did, and nobody ever bothered. Like I say, I mean, they're not responsible, you might say. As long as they showed up for work, they thought they were, you know... doing what the man required. There's a lot more involved in.
When it came down to starting to let people go, did you have to make any of those decisions when they started weeding out people near the end?
Yeah. I made about all of my decisions in my department.
Mm-hmm.
Started out to ask volunteers, and naturally, you always got that few that, yeah, I'll do that. Then it come down to the essential people, what you needed to, you know, complete what they wanted done. Then at that time you had to let some go that you wanted to keep, but they just didn't have the... wasn't qualified enough to do all the things that had to be done, so that eliminated a few. Of course, with any of them, you hate to let any of them go. I did. But it was just a matter of time. I mean, it was just prolonging the misery, that's all it was doing.
Mm-hmm.
With any of us, who knows, coming to a certain point, and that everything's going to stop completely. But you did.
How would you go about telling people that this was their last day?
Well, they would know, well, maybe a week or so ahead of time. Mm-hmm. Friday would be their last day or whatever, and then they would be picking up the check or whatever, and termination papers. It's nothing. I mean, there wasn't any surprise to anyone. I mean, as far as telling them, you know, it'd be the last day, anything. But once it was announced that everything was closing, then, I mean, that was it right then. That was the surprise.
What sort of changes did you see after they broke the news among the workers or in the plant?
Well, I mean, my department, we had to keep up standards and everything, the quality, until we run out of, you know, product to run, and, which we did. We did a good job of it. And, we closed it out.